I would like to welcome back to Coast for this special end of the year Christmas broadcast, David Wilcock. David, welcome back.
Hey, buddy. It's good to see you. Good to hear you, too.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. But let's forget about all of that. How good was it to hear this mainstream media for the last 7 days?
Oh, dude. It's been amazing. You know, it's when I was a college student in 1993, a good friend of mine had a two-hour briefing with his professor in physics, who was the head of the department. And the professor had just told the whole class that UFOs were real and that he'd worked in the high echelons of NASA in the 1970s and that everybody knew it up there and that we had gotten wreckage from these craft and reverse-engineered technologies out of them, including fiber optics, lasers, LED lights, Teflon, computer chips, Velcro, infrared night vision, as well as things that were still classified like free energy, anti-gravity, and portal travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this in 1993. Colonel Philip Corso's book confirmed it in 1997. 4 years later, I already knew about it. And I'd also met an insider in 1996 at a UFO conference, first one I ever went to, who said, wow, your guy had really good information. So one of the things that the professor said way back when I started my whole thing, in 1993, was, you're never going to see this on the front page of the New York Times.
Really?
But on Saturday, December 16th, 2017,
there it is.
It was on the effing front page of the New York Times. So what the hell is going on?
I'm going to ask.
What is going on?
Yeah, so
I've been waiting for this moment my entire life.
And how do you feel? I know, right? How do you feel?
I feel kind of high. I mean, I'm celebrating 25 years without drugs and alcohol, but I'll tell you, it's
there.
It's pretty amazing.
Now, would you call it, David, would you call this what you have been suggesting all along, that there would be a drip, there would be a disclosure light? Is that what's going on, or do you feel stronger about it?
Well, I've been analyzing Tom DeLonge's tweets. I'm in the process of writing an article. You guys kind of pulled a change up on me here, so I went on at 10 o'clock instead of midnight, so the article isn't out yet. It will be out on my website, which is divinecosmos.com, DivineCosmos.com. It should be out tomorrow. But anyway, one of the first things I'm doing now is breaking down Tom DeLonge's tweets. Now, if you don't know this, Tom DeLonge is the former lead singer of the band Blink-182, which basically was the most famous and popular rock band of the 1990s. I think that's been statistically proven. I've met his drummer, Travis Barker, and had a conversation with him at local health food store here called Erewhon. And I talked about Tom DeLonge's pivot to UFOs. And, of course, they had a very successful rock band, and now they've actually replaced the lead singer, which is, you know, you look at what happened with Van Halen, it's not a good idea.
Wow. Okay.
Van Hagar just wasn't the same.
Oh, man. Divide and conquer the audience, David. You that's how you do it. But, yeah, I hear you there. But what else did Travis have to say about this?
Well, you know, I think he was being polite. He wasn't rude. And, you know, he's a pretty unmistakable dude because he's got tats all over and he wears a kind of a wife beater shirt, you know. So, like, whoa, who's that? But if you know him, he's very recognizable. He's got all the piercings and everything. So I just, you know, I try, in general, I don't talk to anybody who's also a public figure because I want to have good public figure karma and not just be bothered everywhere I go. But it happens anyway. I mean, on most days it's cool. You know, Steven Tyler, as I've said to you before, is a friend of mine, and he's coached me on how to handle this, and I've watched him do it, and the key is you just stay really relaxed, and you just take it one person at a time, even if you got a big crowd. And, you know, I'm pretty good at that. So, but at this point, you know, nobody else knew that it was Travis Barker, and we were just talking. And I could kind of feel, I could sense that he was disappointed. You know, I think typically when you're in a band, you act like, this is it, man. This is our life. This is the whole thing. women come and go, but we're always going to be this band. You know, you might have 2-3 wives, but we're always going to be Blink 182. And it's funny because the same kind of thing happened to me back in after I graduated college in circa 1996. I had a band called Rosendale Jazz Project, which was kind of a fusion of jazz and rock and roll music. And the guys in the band, this is when I started to get into UFO research really heavily, and we were doing really advanced stuff. I mean, we all had incredible technique. I was on drums. I was doing stuff that very few drummers could do. And yet, they told me that if I didn't drop all of my UFO research and just focus on the band, that they were kicking me out. And we sounded so good. You know, what, if I had developed that more, it could have led to all kinds of amazing recordings. And it was really, really hard, but I just could not let go of this. And I think that must be what Tom DeLonge felt, is like, even with this enormous, you know, he's set for life with that career, he's on the hero's journey, man. He's turned his back, and he's looking for something greater, and he's being ridiculed and harassed and hung out to dry in the public. And then last Saturday, he got vindicated. So,
well, for us in the UFO community, we understand the significance of last Saturday. You know, that it was a really big deal. Outside of the UFO community, those that, you know, that don't even watch the X-Files, you know, which is the rest of the planet, it seems like the reaction to this very, very big news and revelations was rather timid. It was lukewarm. Why do you think that was? I mean, nothing from the Vatican, nothing from out of Israel. There was nothing from the United Nations or any heads of state, or the religious side of things was, it was just a bizarre silence from the world. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that people have gotten really, really jaded, you know, and they're just at a point where nothing impresses them anymore, and everybody's become kind of cynical and depressed. And also, I think there's been a miscalculation on behalf of whoever was doing this, in terms of, we can't really make people excited about this anymore because there's been so many movies, there's been so much fiction, that it's not, it doesn't have the pizzazz that they may have thought that it would, you know?
Right, right.
It's just kind of like a big yawn.
Well, I was watching the other night a bunch of clips from the media from around the world, and I see this clip from Tucker Carlson, right, from Fox, and Tucker says to the pilot, Dave Fravor, he goes, this should be bigger news than Putin. And it was a weird thing to say, but he's right. You know, he's right. That's his observation. Why isn't this the biggest thing ever? And I think that's the honest question to ask. And to get that from a, you know, a major show host, from a major network like that, and that's the reaction, it's as it should be. Why isn't it bigger news?
Well, I really think that people are just kind of tired of being lied to. And there is a phenomenon that I learned about in psychology called learned helplessness, studied extensively by behaviorists, and the experiment was insane, and it's never anything they do again. But they have a dog, and they got this dog in a room where there's these electrified meshes that he's got to stand on, and they sometimes turn on the electricity and sometimes turn it off. And so there's a little wall that's high enough that the dog can jump over it from one side to the other. So what they'll do is they'll turn on the juice on one side, the dog jumps over to the other side. Then they'll turn on the juice on that side. And all they have to do is electrify both sides for a little while, so the dog, either side the dog jumps to, he's getting electrocuted. And remarkably quickly, the dog will actually curl up and lie down on the electrified floor. And once he does that, you can turn off the juice on the other side and he'll never try to jump again. And I think that what we're seeing here is that people are having that kind of a reaction, just like the dog. It's called learned helplessness. Like, they know that it's true on some level, but they also have lost curiosity because they're just so tired of being lied to.
What was your reaction to the video the first time that you saw it before, you know, the statements from Dave Fravor or Luis Elizondo? What did you think when you saw that video?
Well, Jimmy, here's the funny thing. Just as an aside, I don't know what's going on, but I was told by somebody here in the house that they're not hearing the broadcast on the internet. Like, the streaming is not audible. So are you guys live as far as we're concerned?
We are live. We are live across 600 stations across the United States.
Something happened with it being not working online for whatever reason. So if anybody's having that problem, I really apologize.
Okay,
so let's go back to what you asked me again. Ask me that question again.
What was your reaction when you first saw the video?
It's very interesting. You know, we're looking at high-ranking people from within the Pentagon who are coming out and saying, you know, that this was part of a program that they were working on, that it was kept secret. And it's pretty shocking. You know, I think we're not used to this. This is not like something that usually happens, where you get this raft of statements from the mainstream media just all in a row. Like, and they all are doing it. You know, it's Fox, and it's USA Today, and it's CNN, and it's MSNBC, Washington Post, New York Times, Politico. I mean, just tick down the list, and they're all jumping on board. And it's almost like a litmus test of whether the MSM at mainstream media can even influence people anymore, you know?
Now, you've been talking about it was going to happen exactly like it happened. You've been talking about this for a couple of years, and now it has. What is the driving force behind it? We have the alliance. We have the cabal. There's a push and pull here going on. You know, the good versus evil. Is this part of that play?
Well, I definitely think so. And, you know, I've been analyzing Tom DeLonge's tweets very carefully. And one of the things that I want to point out here is that he did say, and let me just read this exactly. This was on December 14th, which was 2 days before they made the big announcement. He said, "What do you get when you zap a layered piece of bismuth and magnesium with terahertz energy? The dissolution, meaning dissolving, of mass, or at least the effect of which. We are working on an experiment for you all, hashtag kind of like anti-gravity." So he's literally saying here, 2 days before the big announcement, that they've got something that they can show mass disappearing, as in like dematerialization, and that it has some kind of anti-gravity effect. And they're also saying that they have this guy from Lockheed Skunk Works who is going to be able to demonstrate flying craft, you know? So this is – they're saying they can build one, right? And so the thing is, when you look at the tweets and you say – he's saying that this has been planned out, and then a couple days before it happened, he was – tweeting his anticipation, he wasn't sure if it was going to happen. There's something a lot bigger going on here, and this is only the first stage. So it's really important to kind of look below the surface of this and say, okay, it's not like they just did the announcement and it's over. Like, they're going to apparently do this experiment with bismuth, and I've heard from scientists who worked for Black Ops, like Pete Peterson, I've been hearing about bismuth for 20 years. You probably heard about it too. I mean,
sure.
Pete Peterson told me that they used to, that he in fact helped to pioneer a way that they could extract bismuth into a wire, a very long bismuth wire, and that if you make coils out of bismuth, that you can get anti-gravity from it. And way, way back in the dawn of Coast to Coast AM, when it was Art Bell, he had Art's Parts. You remember that?
I do. And well, now, David, when the news started to break, it was all of the interesting stuff that was around it. You have the word UFO there, right? Or the letters UFO. But it's the Pentagon. It's secret programs. It's the Nimitz. It's off the coast of California. It's a warehouse of alien artifacts in Las Vegas. It's Bigelow. It's Senator Harry Reid. It's $22 million program. All of those things were also in this, too, as well. It wasn't just the footage of the UFO. Pretty crazy launch at Christmas.
Oh, yeah. The timing is very interesting, especially in light of other events that you and I talked about when I was on Fade to Black with you last time.
Sure.
And, you know, I got a list here that's going into my article of all that stuff. And that would include, we had on November 2nd, a hidden chamber revealed in the Great Pyramid.
Right.
November 14th, a secret passage found under the Mayan temple. Now, let me just stop right there and say that for those who don't already know this, similar to what's happening to Tom DeLonge, I have had many, many insiders leaking information to me. And now I will say that especially in the last year and a half at the most, maybe longer, but they have been really feeling that it's urgent that this stuff get out. So when there's new information, they really want it to get out there as quickly as possible. So what we've been hearing from this particular group, which we call the Alliance, is that there is a war going on with the deep state. And I found it interesting in going through Tom DeLonge's tweets that when he was describing that they have this guy from Skunk Works and they want to build an anti-gravity machine, and if you see the tweets of it, it looks kind of like a UFO flying saucer, but it has two kind of dart-like extensions coming off of either side, so it looks almost like a spear with a plate in the middle. He's saying that there are forces that don't want them to be able to build this. So I find that interesting. It's as if he is struggling against something that wouldn't want them to be able to build this kind of craft.
Yeah, and the craft also looks like it doesn't have a front or a back.
Yeah, it could go either way.
It could go either way.
So what we're hearing is that there are artifacts inside this chamber in the Great Pyramid, and I think some of this stuff came in since I talked to you on the air about it, that there's all these plans that they have for how they could do disclosure. And as we talked about on Fade to Black, they like to have a whole banquet of these things. It's not like they're going to necessarily use all of them, but they want to have everything available in terms of which way it's going to go. So one of the things they have available is, there's this giant chamber inside the Great Pyramid. They've known about it for a long time. Apparently, it's got some really amazing technology in it, and it's going to be very surprising when we see it. And the same thing with this secret passageway under the Mayan temple. That apparently goes to another treasure room. One of the things that Pete Peterson shared with me recently is that we have been visited by extraterrestrial civilizations five different times on a major level, and that means significant enough that they made a fairly serious colonization of Earth when they got here. Now, these are not people who necessarily spread out over a large area. They might have only had one area. And in a lot of cases, they will have a craft that either lands here or crashes here, and they kind of convert that craft. It could be a mothership in some cases. Some of them are several miles long, but the mothership is converted out of the craft and becomes, the mothership is converted into a city. And a lot of times these are now underground. So one of the things that various insiders have shared with me is that there are all kinds of really wonderful places on Earth that if you know where to go, you can go and visit them. And they're all under the control of the military-industrial complex. But you go into these places, and it's just a wonderland of amazing technology. You don't even need to leave the Earth. There's amazing stuff here.
As you're speaking right now, we have a bunch of monitors monitoring all of the mainstream media. You know, breaking news. This is a live radio show. And just in case anything breaks, we're on top of it. And there it is. Watching the video on one of the mainstream shows right now, and they're talking about it. live on the air at, you know, 10:45 on Saturday night. It's continuing. It's been on now for about 5 minutes.
And what are they talking about?
I'm listening to you, David. I'm just watching the program. But yeah, it's just like I'm sitting here and I point to Nathan as we're sitting here talking about it, and I just pointed at them. There it is.
Are you talking about the chamber and the Great Pyramid, or
no, DeLong and the Pentagon's secret UFO program? Now this
it's such a complex subject, and I really feel that Tom DeLong's heart is in the right place. And if he does want to collaborate with me, you know, he said that his To the Stars Academy is open source and that they're open to information. So I would like, I mean, the fact that this is being taken so seriously is wonderful. And I think that we either hang together or hang separately. You know?
Why do you think there are other researchers out there that, you know, we don't have to name names. We don't need to go there. It's not that kind of show, but... Why do you think there are other researchers out there that are negative about this? Shouldn't everybody be happy that this is finally in the mainstream and we've made some progress? Why would there be such negativity out there?
Well, you know, we talked about that highly competitive jazz program I was in college that then led to this band I had when I graduated. And it's similar, you know, I think this field is similar to professional music, and you could go back to my jazz program in college where everybody is like very aware of who's number one, who's number two, who's number three in terms of the level of talent that you had, how much amazing technique you could display on your instrument, how good was your band as a whole, as an ensemble, how's your use of volume control and dynamics, how well can you end a song, how well do you phrase, all this kind of stuff. Rap music, same thing. It's all about dissing other rappers, right? Every guy is like,
so you think it's jealousy,
the best.
Right? So you think it's jealousy?
Well,
could be.
Let's be honest. Nobody is making a living doing this to any appreciable degree. It is very, very, very difficult to get by in this field, and so I think there is a financial stake in this, which is. For some reason, most of the people, if not the majority of the people in this field, they cultivate a little plot of land, they got their own garden there, and that's their world. And they only refer to their garden, and they don't cross-reference anybody else's work. You know, I think it's awesome that you brought David Icke on with me. He's an amazing researcher. He's been out there longer than I have. And we need to support each other.
Mm-hmm.
So please go and, you know, see David Icke's conferences and buy his books. I mean, they're awesome. So I don't know why we can't just do that. Why can't we just compliment each other? And so that's what I've always been trying to do, is tie together all of the threads here. Now, with that being said, I am partly responsible for setting up kind of a negative tone around whatever Tom DeLong is releasing, because we got intel saying that there was going to be a plan for a partial disclosure. And a partial disclosure could be something that offsets what we're calling a full disclosure. And that's a big key, is some of these plans for partial disclosure seems to indicate that even the people who we're calling the good guys, the Alliance, and I do believe they're the good guys, but some elements within the Alliance, they really don't want to be part of the swamp when it's fully drained. They want the swamp to have a little bit of liquid left in it, because if the whole swamp got drained, then everybody's dirty and everybody gets in trouble. So there is a desire for people to live out their lives comfortably, to go into retirement, to not have problems and not have the full scope of the things that would damn them to be released until well after they're gone. So for this same reason, some of the most incendiary stuff that we could find out, there's a lot of people who want to hold that off for 50, maybe 100 years. And that's too long. We have a planetary emergency that supersedes the needs of individuals to want to stay undercover. That's my feeling.
Right.
That doesn't mean I want to get people killed. And I do very much support amnesty. I think that the only way we're going to do this, the only way we're going to get through this transition is to not have the torches and pitchforks witch hunt mentality that is so consistently the case in history when damning information comes out. You know, but yet, if you look at what's already happening, we're already getting the Me Too campaign. We're already seeing all kinds of unsavory stuff coming out. And those people are not being beaten in the street, and they're not being gunned down. You know, they're certainly not happy. Sometimes in the paparazzi media, you know, like after Harvey Weinstein, there were photographs of him when he goes to the gas station. That's not fun. But it's not like when people find out something negative that that person is immediately being beaten or killed.
Well, this version of disclosure, the partial disclosure that you've talked about for the last couple of years,
yep.
Is it to control the narrative for what's about to happen in a week or two or a couple of days? We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. But
well,
is it?
If Tom DeLonge is saying that their own experiments are going to show bismuth and a magnesium alloy that dematerializes under the presence of certain energy, that's a game changer. If that is shown to the world, wow.
Well, that, which is fine. That's technology, and it could be alien technology, and it could be E-tech. That's fine. But what about the other aspect with what the Pentagon is sitting on, or maybe additional video that they are going to allow the release of? You know, I don't know. Well, it could go back
right.
to Roswell. Maybe they're going to confirm.
What I'm trying to say is, getting back to what we started with, they have things like a UFO under the ground in Ecuador that you can go into, and it looks like the plants from Avatar inside, luminous plants. There's some weird exobiology that grows in there that they've determined is safe for us to contact and breathe. I have a new insider who I've been calling Paul, this guy who, you know, I wrote about his material, and then he had everything stolen out of his house, and then I wrote about his material in another article, and he had a head-on collision. So one of the things I want to announce tonight is that his name is Emery Smith, and we have already interviewed him in a debut episode on Gaia and Cosmic Disclosure, and we have 14 more that we already taped in one sitting, and it's totally amazing. This is a guy who claims that he was personally involved in Sandia Laboratory at Los Alamos, which is Kirtland Air Force Base,
mm-hmm.
that he was personally involved in autopsying 3,000 different types of extraterrestrial bodies, each one totally unique from the others.
3,000.
3,000. Now, I've known this guy, Emery, for 10 years, and I didn't even think he would ever come forward. He was just one of the insiders I had who was totally anonymous. I'd hardly ever even talk about him. But after all these things happened to him, he said, that's it. And I told him, I said, Emery, the only way you're going to save your life is to come forward. If you don't come forward, you're toast.
What kind of evidence does he have, David?
Well, that's the problem. He had... Okay, I'm gonna kind of spoil some of what's coming up in future episodes on our show. When he worked at Sandia, they have these terms that they give you to reduce psychological impact, quote unquote. So he had this thing, it's very similar to what Corey Good has described. It was a piece of clear material, like 8.5 by 11 sized, that was like an iPad, but you could see through it. And then in the top right corner of the thing was a little gold disc about the size of a quarter, but it looked like it was gold-colored, and you could slide this thing into what they called a folder. They didn't call it anything special. They just called it a folder. So that micro disc is a very exotic technology that stores an incredible amount of data, and it's not being released to the public. But the micro disc also had a reader. And so there are readers that you can plug these little disks into, and now you've got, like, you know, incredible numbers of terabytes of storage. And he doesn't want to say how. I do know how, but he managed to smuggle one of these micro disks out of Sandia, and he had it in his house. And that was one of the things that we had. But then when I started to talk about him on my website,
did you see that
house?
Did you see this disc?
I never got to see it, and it's so frustrating because he had a whole treasure trove of pilfered Black Ops goodies in this house,
mm-hmm.
and he had literally sheetrocked it into the walls so that you wouldn't know that it was there unless you ripped open the walls. Well, in the debut episode that we just did, you know, the next one's coming out in January in Cosmic Disclosure. They went into the wall. They knew where it was, and they took the stuff out. And this poor guy has had everything stolen, you know, almost lost his life in a head-on collision. I was there and saw, you know, the aftermath of this crash because he lives right locally here. And this is real. So the point is, when you start to look at what he's saying, it dovetails so well with what guys like William Tompkins were saying, what guys like Corey Good is saying. This is a sizable leap forward. And here's the thing. I want to really stress this. In one day, he might do multiple corpses. He walks into this clean surgical facility. He drops his folder, quote-unquote, which again is like a smart glass pad, drops it down on the table, and now he gets this big holographic display. And you can touch it with your hands and move it around, and it shows you the ET that you're about to operate on, and it shows you what parts they want you to extract. So his job was to plop his folder down on the table, see the hologram, look for what they wanted him to extract, and then he'd pull this drawer out of the wall, and there'd be the body there, and he'd go in with various surgical tools and extract tissue, and then he would place it in certain containers and stick it through other things in the wall, and then there were other specialists on the other side who would take these samples and use them in more elaborate research. I guess maybe keeping them on some kind of storage or computer imaging on a much more detailed level. I'm not really sure. It was so compartmentalized, he didn't know what exactly they were doing with it. But the point is, he was just one guy working in one lab on one floor of a gigantic base that had dozens of labs per floor and dozens of floors. And if he himself, in just a couple of years, saw 3,000 different types of bodies, and then we can validate, we have all of his documents, we have all of these documents that show that he was serving in the military.
Right.
So that's provable information. We can't prove that everything else he's saying is true yet. But what I have to look for is, because these military-industrial complex old-school cabal people are so good at confiscating that type of stuff, any provable data.
Well, look. Now, David, I've been watching Twitter during the break here. And the overwhelming response to all of this is great, but what can we expect in 2018? Is it going to be the big D? Are we going to have open contact?
That's a good question. I don't think it's safe to make any type of prognostications. You know, the audience clamors for dates. They want specifics, and then it's the scapegoat routine where if something doesn't happen on that date, then they say, oh, your credibility's been destroyed.
Yeah, but you're kind of in the clear now.
Well, that's true. I mean, this is the I told you so party that we're having. You know,
sure.
Old coffee and special coffee that only you have, of course. But that's how we can stay awake.
I'm sipping it now. But, but you know, the I can't imagine it getting bigger. Because, you know, for me, I didn't even need this past weekend, but it was certainly an I told you so moment, like you just said. But what can we expect in 2018? Do you think it's going to come from the Pentagon? Do you think it's from a contactee? Is it going to be leaked information? Is it going to be WikiLeaks? Is more insiders coming forward?
There's so much that's getting ready to happen. It really seems to me that some big hurdles are being crossed in that a lot of the elements of the deep state that were holding back us from getting these planet-healing technologies, they are already being arrested, indicted, and there's supposedly secret trials. That's one of the things I'm writing my article about. I've been passed some very time-sensitive information. We probably don't have enough time to get into it and cover everything else tonight, but I am doing this big article that I was hoping to get done before we get on the air that's just loaded with this kind of briefing stuff. And, my God, I mean, we could end up hearing that Antarctica has an ancient civilization in it. We could end up finding out that there are UFOs under the surface of the Earth's crust that are ancient. People might see those results. In fact, we were talking about that cigar-shaped asteroid, and I don't know exactly how it's being pronounced. I've only seen it in writing, but it's I'll take a guess and say Oumuamua, right?
Right, O-U, right.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they pronounce the O-U part, but it could be Aumuamua or Oumuamua. But anyway, that is the subject of a huge briefing that Corey Good got recently, and this is really amazing. Apparently, one of the things we've been hearing is Corey has been talking about this so-called secret space program, and it's not that hard to figure out that if the U.S. government got their hands on the working interstellar spacecraft 70 years ago, which is when Roswell happened, it's been 70 years that they've had to tinker around, figure out how this stuff works. Now we have the New York Times, the Washington Post, everybody openly saying, yep, it's most likely that UFOs really do exist. And he's got this guy from Skunk Works saying we're going to build one and we need funding so that it doesn't get stopped, but we know how to do it. So let's just say that the people who got the Roswell crash went out into space, have had fleets of ships that can go out into space all through our solar system. They're not just going to look. They're going to land, and they're going to use local materials, and they're going to build bases there. And in fact, William Tompkins, who sadly just died, was responsible for designing the prototype of the original cigar-shaped craft that Corey Good was involved with when he was in this program called Solar Warden. So the Apollo program wasn't just supposed to land on the moon like they did. It was supposed to start building bases to have a permanent military presence up there. So the idea is that that Apollo blueprint was followed, but it was just done on a covert level. So there appear to be two major parts to the secret space program. There's a part that is essentially what we could call a breakaway civilization that's divorced from another part that we're now calling the military-industrial complex space program. So the larger one, the breakaway one, seems to have started from the defense contractors and predominantly through the Navy, but then it just branched off and stayed in these bases off-planet and cut all the ties, or almost all the ties, that it had to the Earth. But there's another one that seems to be running predominantly through things like the DIA, or Defense Intelligence Agency, the U.S. Department of Defense, and this is still highly classified, but compared to the other one, they're more like the Coast Guard. They have ships that can get them around our solar system pretty comfortably, but they can't leave the solar system for whatever reason. At least what most of these people think is that they can't leave. And they are told that in that faction, they are told we have a lot of extraterrestrials visiting us, but that could include stuff that's from the other secret space program. They just don't realize that it's actually us. They're just told that it's a prototype aircraft or it's an extraterrestrial or something like this. So anyway, that faction, Corey Good has been working with a guy who's an insider from that faction called Sigmund. And the briefing that he got on this Oumuamua thing is amazing, because we now have people openly, in just the last couple weeks, right around the time of the Tom DeLonge announcement, saying, and this includes guys like Stephen Hawking, right, our modern Einstein, saying they think this is probably a spaceship because it's cylindrical. And that's the right kind of shape if you want to move through space and not get hit by asteroids and a bunch of dust. Because a dust particle, when you're going that fast, is going to really be damaging.
Right.
So here's the deal. We're hearing, and this is, again, it's the third article, because this is the part that Corey hasn't gotten to write up yet, but the third article down the line that I'm going to be releasing hopefully over the next week or so, week or two. Supposedly, this local space program does have the ability to fly around our solar system, and this thing did come crashing into our solar system recently, and they went and they landed on it, and they were able to get inside.
Really?
Yes. And this is what gets so crazy. This ship appears to be over a billion, with a B, a billion years old. Now, let me just say that again.
Yeah, I get you. I get you.
It is a ship. It is over a billion years old. It had this weird biological film on it, which they analyzed and ultimately discovered was the long since frozen remains of the original crew. Because remember, in space, it's like it's all dry and cold. And here's the crazy part. This thing has been obviously floating around for a very long time. It's been bone picked. A lot of the best stuff in it is gone. But what is still remaining inside this thing is a virtual treasure trove of advanced technology, very, very advanced technology, unlike anything they've seen before. And we also heard that there are three different types of beings that they found inside that are in some sort of stasis field and still appear to be intact and still appear to be identifiable, and there's three different types of races in there. And then the question is, okay, well, do they know anything about what these people are? And the answer is yes. This actually appears, and I know I apologize to the skeptics. You guys can go nuts on me in the comments if you want to. That's fine. You know, if you need to believe that I'm lying to you, you can. I'm just sharing what people are telling me who are very, very credible and have proven it to me. What we're hearing is that there was this group that they call the Ancient Builder Race, and this group was about 2.5 billion years old. Now, they don't know exactly how old the ship is. They only know it's over a billion years old. And they have certain types of chronometric dating that are different than what we get with carbon-14, much more advanced, that allow them to make those calculations. They have not released that technology to the public, so people wouldn't know what it is. Anyway, this Ancient Builder Race apparently has been all over the local stars in our little local cluster of stars here. And everywhere they went, it's starting to sound like a Christmas song.
Right.
Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Right.
Everywhere they went, they built pyramids and obelisks made out of this transparent aluminum material that was like this indestructible glass, sometimes clear, sometimes whitish, sometimes jet black, different colors. And those types of pyramids and obelisks and domes have been found on moons and planets in our solar system, very heavily eroded because they're so old. And this is the civilization that also built elaborate underground facilities that can still be found and reoccupied, repressurized, and used.
Now, this ship has... So what you're suggesting is... This ship has been here before, or another ship like it?
Well, it appears to be one of the ships that was piloted by this original civilization that's over 2 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
It built all these things, and they didn't know anything about it because other civilizations came in later and scratched off all the written inscriptions, obscured whatever history there was about these people. So now we have a ship that somehow didn't get that treatment. It's got the writing in it. It's got the computer mainframes in it.
Is it under control? Is it on autopilot, or is it derelict?
No, it's destroyed.
Right.
It's very thoroughly smashed up on the outside.
Right.
And it's tumbling end over end through our solar system.
Right.
We had the chance to land on it, and it's very, very amazing. And so it does appear that the timing of this is not an accident, and some higher-level ETs out there probably steered it into position to come through our solar system at this time, so that the so-called, as Corey used to call it, the lower-level secret space program, or the military-industrial complex one, which is only able to go around our solar system,
right,
they still got their hands on this thing. So this is very exciting because we have already been hearing that part of the disclosure process was going to be that we'd find out about this military-industrial complex space program. And if they've now found the crown jewel of all ancient ruins, well, holy smokes.
Well, and this is what's interesting here, David, is that we have this object, you know, the first interstellar object, we have that. We have all of the FSB fast radio bursts that have been talked about.
Yep.
We have the bacteria that is now on the outside of the ISS.
You got it.
Right? We have that. We have all of the exoplanet discoveries that are going on.
They just announced that the whole universe is probably filled with biological life.
That's right. And yep. So all of this in like the last 45 days.
I know. It's really, really crazy what's going on. And, you know, I'm not the type of person to get jealous, but Corey Good apparently was shown video of the interior of this ship. They already have it, and he got to see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
And he hasn't shared it with you. What did Corey describe that he had seen?
He said it was very, very amazing, and what I've been sharing with you is about as much as I can remember him saying. He has to finish writing up the briefing. There's probably going to be more details that we didn't get to, but I think I covered the majority of it.
Is he still awake? We'll get him on the show in this next segment.
No, he's...
He's traveling, I know.
He's been traveling on the road, and he crashed at like 8 o'clock or something.
Oh, man. On the biggest week of the year, you know, that's what I said to him earlier this week. I know he told you. I'm like, of all the weeks that you need to go and see your family and celebrate Christmas, it's this week. You know, and I was making fun, but it's just such a huge week for us. Now, and everybody on hold, we're going to get to your calls here right after this break. But there's one other point. You brought up Antarctica. Are there other countries now that are not under the control of the United States that are not going to have issues with the UFO question, bringing out the real video and pilots and not have it sequestered and squashed by the United States? I mean, why? Who would be afraid now?
I think this is a golden road. You know, it's kind of interesting that they dropped it before Christmas because
right.
In the field of business, in the field of almost anything, like nothing gets done during Christmas. You know, people aren't at work. You can't get anybody on the phone. If they are at work, they just phone it in. They don't really do anything.
Right.
So. It's kind of like the calm before the storm because this got dropped on everybody. Well, they're all big in the Christmas spirit, and they're out there buying things and getting eggnog and stockings and all this, and it's like, wait a minute. Once we come and we can sit down and we can get back on the internet and back into our normal routine, now we're going into a world where UFOs exist. Now we're going into a world where we're seeing F-18 fighter pilot videos of these craft that are rotating as they travel and zip off at an unbelievable speed.
That's right.
This is a whole new world. And I think people, there's been kind of a collective yawn. It hasn't been anywhere near the kind of bombshell that I think some people were thinking it would be when this finally happened.
Well, you know, we were being told that was going to be the reaction. Obviously, we knew different. But let me go here for a second.
Sure.
Before we hit this break. We've got about 90 seconds, David. Now that we have seen DeLong present who his whistleblowers are, who his team is, named them, CVs, vetted, does this open the door to all of those other whistleblowers out there that want to go, you know, without naming names, now it's kind of okay?
Well, that's why I'm talking about Emery Smith, because he did come forward with his name just very, very recently. This is as major as when William Tompkins came forward. It totally validates everything Corey Good is saying. And, you know, he never was told about a secret space program. He simply had a job at a military base where he autopsied different extraterrestrial bodies every day, suggesting some part of our military-industrial complex has access to a very large community of extraterrestrials, and they're probably getting these as payment for something they're offering in return so they can catalog who's who in the zoo.
Yeah, and I think that with all of those out there, the researchers that say, you know, I've got a whistleblower. Well, what's it? You know, I can't really disclose. Well, now the public can say, yes, you can. You know, DeLong did it. Wilcock did it. It's okay. So you can't hide behind, you know, that well, it's an unnamed. He can't come forward. Yes, you can, and it's a safe world out there. That's where
you
I think we're at.
Don't be embarrassed. You know,
that's right.
Nobody's going to hate on you anymore.
That's right.
Now mainstream.
That's exactly right.
The mainstream media is 100% on board.
100%.
Is saying we got to have an open mind. I mean, this is it. It is happening right now.
All right, welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest right now is David Wilcock. And, David, no event would be complete without you taking some phone calls with me. You ready?
Well, I'm cracking my knuckles, and I'm ready to dive into the shark tank.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go top to bottom. Let's go to Thomas. Let's go West Coast. Thomas in La Jolla. Thomas, you're up next on Coast.
Hi, Jimmy. Thank you for taking my call. And, David, I hope you eventually release the Ascension Mysteries on audio compact disc. My question for you, David, is there have to be extraterrestrials of integrity out there, reliable, trustworthy, friendly. How can the average citizen contact, meet face-to-face extraterrestrials without having to go through the deep state, so to speak? Any recommendations?
Sure.
Thank you, Thomas.
I think it's important to understand that we have been at a point in our history where even though the 95% of the ETs that are out there are benevolent, it's something where they use techniques to contact us in the earlier stages that avoid creating fear and avoid giving us a Messiah Christ complex. So they did actually contact people in person in fairly decent numbers in the 1950s. There was a major group in Italy called the Friendship Case. You can watch that documentary called The Friendship Case from Italian television. There were several groups in America that were contacted, and these were human-looking ETs that were taking people on board their ships and teaching them about ascension and all the stuff that's going on. And then what they found was that people really, over the long term, started to have a really hard time with this. They started to think too highly of themselves. They started to feel like they were a Christ-like figure. So what they're doing now, for the most part, is at least in the earlier stages, they're communicating through things like synchronicity. And synchronicity can be encoded. You can decide that something that happens to you will have significance. Like, for example, looking at the clock randomly and it's got repeating digits, or looking at a license plate, it has repeating digits, or your odometer while you're driving your car. Now, this stuff happens to me all the time, and it's not like I'm trying to do it. It just keeps happening. So synchronicity would be an earlier stage. A later stage is dreams. You might wake up with a dream in which you have ET contact. Now, a lot of the briefings we've been getting say that those are not just dreams, that there are encounters happening at other levels of reality that we remember when we wake up, and we believe that it was just a dream, but it's a lot more than that. With all that being said, the beings that Corey Good has been speaking to have told us that there are going to be much more in-person contacts coming in the future. And since the good guys in this struggle are really, really good, and they operate on a very high level of morals and ethics, really the best thing you can do is to try to adhere to the principles of brotherly love, compassion, having loving thoughts about yourself, loving thoughts about others. It sounds hokey for people who are cynical and sarcastic, but this is how the ETs think, and they see us as really compromised and living in a lot of pain that's unnecessary because we cause it upon ourselves with our attitude.
Well, David, that's just really good advice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. And if you, look, you want to get too invited to a party, you've got to have the right attitude, right?
Yes.
And it's really that simple. Let's go out east. Michael in Virginia. You're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hello, David, from Virginia Beach, just down the street from ARE. David, you spoke earlier about a war inside the deep state, and that would imply that there is also a war inside the deep media. And oh, yeah. Last week's story in the New York Times, which Jimmy Church introduced this show with talking about, that would indicate that the war is fully engaged as of last Saturday. This war between the deep state and the deep media. Now, my question, very specific, I know and I have read your friend's book, Joseph P. Farrell. He gives you a lot of credit in his book, Babylon's Banksters. And when he talks about this war between the deep states, plural, he talks about the Nazis who came here under Operation Paperclip.
Right.
He talks about the Nazis who went to Russia under a similar program, and he actually tells us that they had a plan to retard both Russia and the United States in the development of their programs dealing with extraterrestrials.
Okay, now, Michael, let me jump in. Michael, let me jump in. We're going to run out of time. So well, I need David to have time to respond. So what's the question?
Okay, the question is this. Do you believe that the ongoing war between of the Russia probe, members in the media for the Russia probe and against the Russia probe, do you believe that the New York Times is actually on the side of those for the Russia probe and that this is designed to knock out Russian communist influence inside the Trump administration?
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Michael. Is this to run interference on the Russian probe? Yes or no, David?
Well, I don't feel I'm qualified to give an answer on that, and that might not be what you want to hear. But
no, that's fair.
I don't really get into the whole new McCarthyism thing.
There you go.
I think the Russia thing is lame. I mean, look, Russia today was doing amazing stuff, and they were leaking the truth left and right. I've been in like three different three-hour documentaries on Russian television that reached 21 million people where I'm just out of the box talking about all the kind of stuff with the banking system and finances and everything.
Right, right.
So why all of a sudden are we trying to make Russia the bad guy?
I'm with you. Totally out of our wheelhouse. We could sit around and speculate all day long, but it's just that. It's just speculation. I do question the timing of it and why, but running it into other political arenas, I just don't feel confident in nearly having an opinion. Let's go with, let's see, first time caller line, Chris in Minnesota. You're up next on Co. Say hi to David. Look, there it is. X-Files really exist. It's up on the big screen again all night long here in the studio. What's on your mind, Chris? Say hi to David.
Hey, David. Yeah, I first discovered you around early 2012 when the whole Mayan 2012 thing was going on. I was just wondering, you know, whatever happened to that? It seems like nothing really happened.
Well, okay, this is an important question. When I broke down the Mayan calendar in my book, Source Field Investigations, what we found was that each of the different time cycles that the Mayans were counting, allegedly a primitive civilization, were directly tied in with celestial movements in our solar system. And that includes the Tzolk'in cycle, which is 260 days. It's a subset of the orbits of the inner planets. It's like a little common denominator that you can add up units of 260, and you'll get all these orbits very nicely. That was discovered by a professor in Australia. And then it turns out that they got Khatuns, which last about 20 years, Bakhtuns, which last about 400 years. The whole cycle lasts 5,125 years. And that in turn, that cycle, all of these cycles are stellar units of counting. Now, how the heck did these people know how to create counting systems that were so tied in with the movement of the planets? Now, the Mayan calendar cycle of 5,125 years itself is one-fifth of a cycle that everybody in the ancient world was obsessed with, which is the precession of the equinoxes, a 25,000-year wobble in the Earth's axis, causing the stars in the night sky to drift by 1 degree every 72 years. Now, what I've done is I've gone through, you can watch my show Wisdom Teachings on Gaia. If you subscribe and get George's show Beyond Belief, you can also watch my show. It's all part of the basic subscription there. What I've been talking about in episode after episode after episode is prophecies from every single ancient tradition. I'm talking Egyptian, Greek, Islamic, Christian, Zoroastrian, Buddhist, Hindu. Everybody is talking about the idea that at the end of this 25,000-year cycle, the sun gives off a big flash, and we go into some sort of meta-humanity. We turn into some kind of ascended light being. Now, the calculated date that we thought this was going to happen was at the end of 2012, based on the Mayan calendar end date as it was calculated. What has happened as of 2 years after 2012 is that I started to talk to Corey Good. This was October 2014 now. Corey Good is contacted in March 2015 by beings that appear to be the same beings that wrote the Law of One, which is the source text that I got a lot of this stuff from, these blue avians. And what they said and what they showed him, if you believe it, is that our solar system had these giant spheres that came in 2012. They're invisible to us. They're multidimensional. To hold off the sun doing this because we were not ready as a planet for this to happen yet. But apparently the latest that they can hold it off would be no later than like the year 2023, 2024. So we've got about a 12-year extension, which might not seem like a lot, but I was very concerned as we were getting towards the end of the year 2012 that the kind of things that we're seeing right now, disclosure, hadn't happened yet. And we need that to light people up and awaken them to a greater reality. We need that kind of mass awakening to occur before we would be ready for something like this to happen.
You're exactly right. I mean, that's spelling it out spot on.
Thank you.
Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Chris, you're up next on Coast. Say hi to David.
Yes. I'm a Coast to Coast insider. I've been listening for 13 years and better, even all the way back to Art Bell days. Bob Lazar and the other guy, John Lear, have you communicated with them in any way about some of their stuff?
We did do a Cosmic Disclosure episode where we responded to interviews with John Lear. I wasn't there when he was interviewed. Bob Lazar, I'd love to talk to Bob Lazar. He pretty much stays out of the limelight now. But I was all over his story back in like 1995, 96. Because back then, the internet had almost nothing on it, except for Art Bell, actually.
Right.
And, so you would go to the bookstore, and that was the headlines. And so there were plenty of books talking about Bob Lazar and his Element 115 and the propulsion system of this thing that he was looking at. I totally believe Bob Lazar. He has no reason to lie. He's never made money off of this. And he seems like a very credible guy.
Yep. And today, you know, he's right there. You know, we can go back, and there's been enough shots taken at him to discredit so many different things, what, you know, college and what have you. But no matter what, today he's quite admired in the UFO community. I don't think there's many out there that would challenge Bob Lazar today. All right, let's
the first really cool insider to come forward.
You know, and this is what I used to do. I might have enough time for one more call, but I wanted to say this about Lazar. I want your take on this. This is what I used to do, David, is I would watch it up to it recently. I still do it. I go back and I watch his videos and I try to trip him up. Right? I want him to make a mistake. I'm looking at his eyes, his speech, it's just things, and I'm trying to catch the mistake. And it just doesn't happen.
Well, let me say this, too. I had an insider who I got to speak to after I graduated college, and we call him, trying to remember what the right secret name for him is.
Well, no more secret names now. Now,
well, I don't want to betray who he Antonio was a secret name.
Okay.
He's Spanish, okay? And, you know, I was around this guy for quite some time. And he was in touch with the top 90 people in the world, so he said. And one of the things he talked about was transuranic elements, as he called them. And he independently, without knowing about Lazar, knew about element 115. And other insiders have since said that with this element, it suddenly stabilizes, which we now know it does. It's not radioactive. And apparently when you hit it with little protons, it kicks out matter. And in the course of kicking out matter, it creates thrust. And so that's how it's used inside a craft. It's actually creating little particles, but in the process, you can accelerate very, very rapidly.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
David, Merry Christmas, my friend. And
thank you
for taking the time to come in and hang out with us with the Coast audience. I know that you're going to prep this paper. Tomorrow's Christmas Eve, and then we've got Christmas Day. When are we going to see the release on that? And will it be on Cosmic Disclosure?
Cosmic Disclosure is going to have more of Emery Smith starting in January. And as I said, we taped 15 amazing episodes. We got his trip to the Vatican. We got him talking about bioaugmentation. It turns out that the guy like Wolverine in X-Men, where it's these high-density alloys of metal on the skeleton, they've done that with biological life.
So the release will be on Divine Cosmos.
Yeah, my website, divinecosmos.com, is going to have an article. And this is coming from the very, I want to stress this, it's the very highest levels of the command structure of the Alliance that are urging me to get this out as quickly as possible due to how sensitive it is. So the article is going to be starting with the title Stunning New Briefings, and just go click on that and prepare to be amazed, because there's a whole lot of stuff that we didn't even start to talk about on this show. It's very, very essential for everybody to know about.